All right, so in yesterday's parasha, so it says Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Loma Yom Ritzrayim Lemor, Beroa Otziyam, Larogosam Bahorim, Ulachalosam Me'alpnei Adama. Okay, so the tefillah was a tefillah of Kiddush Hashem. That's the most powerful tefillah. That the purpose of Klal Yisrael is that the world should recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, if the Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was that if Klal Yisrael is destroyed at this point, so the whole purpose of Klal Yisrael, which is Kiddush Mo Gadol, will not be accomplished. But that's the general idea of the tefillah. But there's a strange Rashi that gives a quotes a medrash on this tefillah, and he interprets the tefillah Lam Yom Ratzayim Lema Barah Hotziyam. So he gives a specific meaning to the word Barah Hotziyam, and that it's funny. Rashi does not bring it down in Kisisa, but Rashi mentions it previously. Previously in Bo. And Bo, where in after the Makas Barad, it's interesting. Paro's responses to the Makos are interesting. I mean, the responses. I mean, we left off last time. I wanted to discuss the mindset of Paro. But let me just start first with this medrash. That so after Dom, Paro had no response. After Tzfardeya, he responded and he asked Moshe Rabbeinu Mitzvah. After Kenan, there was no response. After Orov, there was a response because it was Viflesi. He saw the Hashkocha, that differentiation between Klal Yisrael and the Triumph. That was after Deva, there was no response. After Shkin, there was no response. But after Borod, there was a major response. Because by Borod was, Kiba Pamazos, Anish Lechas Kolma Gefosei Alipcha. And there was a major response where he stated. He made the statement Hashem Atzadik Vani V'Ami Yerushoyim. That was the first time he ever came to that level. But what is that response? Basically, he should have just said send the people out. What is Hashem Atzadik Vani V'Ami Yerushoyim? We'll get into that a little bit. But that was the major response. But Barad has such a powerful effect that by Arba, it wasn't necessary to bring the Arba in order to have a response from Paro. So that even the mere warning of the Makkah brought a response. That's the first time, the only time that the warning of a Makkah actually brought a response. Because it says, after the effects of Barad, then the warning of Arba itself caused Paro to respond. And what did he say? He said, L'chu idus Hashem alakechem miva miyahochem. So, V'yama Moshe ben Arein of his Canaan and Nelech, so then Paro said a strange thing. In other words, basically he's not going to send them out with the taf. Re'u, he said, ki ro'a neged panechem. So what does it mean, ki ro'a neged panechem? So the plain interpretation is that now I see what you want. You really want to escape. And the ro'a that you intend to do is neged panechem, is become manifest. But Rashi says gives a strange medrash. Says a medrash agor shemati. Says kochav echad yesh shmo ro'a. There's a star, and the name of that star is ro'a. Omar lam para ro'a ni bitzlagninus sheli. I see in my astrology. Oso kochav ola lekraschem b'midbar. That this star is rising towards you in the midbar. V'hu simin dam v'ariga. And that's a sign of blood and death. Kishachotu Yisrael ba'egel, when the Jews sinned by the egel, u'bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu lahargam, God intended to destroy them. Amar Moshe b'tfiloso, lama yomer Mitzrayim lemor b'roh hotziyam. Why should the Egyptians say, you see, what we said is true, that you brought them out under the star, Ra. Zui Shamal Hamruki Ra Neget Panechem. Niyad Vayinochem Arashem Al Ra. So God had Rachmanis on Klal Yisrael. Vahofech Asadom L'dam Mila. And he changed the Dam, changed the Gzera, and he changed the Dam to Dam Mila. Shemol Yoshua son. That where's the Dam Mila? That Yoshua gave them Mila. Vizeo Shinema Hayom Galos Yeshrapas Mitzrayim Me'aleichem. And that's why it says in Yoshua that today I removed the Cherpa, the shame of Mitzrayim, from you. Okay, Shoy Omrim Lachem, because they said, Dam on Aram Aleichem on Midbar. We see blood against you in the Midbar. Okay. So we don't believe in astrology, and we don't believe in the star. The star has no power. And moreover, you could see Chazal. The chokhmah of Chazal is that they couch it in a riddle, in a mashal. But there's really a deep idea behind the mashal. So if you and every time, Prag, whenever you look at one of these type of chazal, you'll see that it doesn't lend itself to a straight interpretation. For instance, over here, with the straight interpretation, there are two major problems. First of all, what does it mean when it says that I see Dam against you in the Midbar? Okay? And then it says, Vayinochem Hashem, and he converted it to Dam Mila. That Yeshua was Mal. Because later it says that Yeshua, after he broke Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, so he gave them Mila, and he says, Hayom Galosi Me'eschem Eschapas Mitzrayim. But the problem was they were out of the Midbar then. And all Paro said was that this star Ra, which we never heard of before, is in the Midbar. So why does he do Dam Mila later when they're out of the Midbar? On the contrary, he should have done Dam Mila right then. But that's one difficulty. It simply doesn't fit in. Facts don't fit in. Okay, it's not that they were out of the Midbar and there was no reason for it. Moreover, it doesn't fit in for another reason, because they already had Dam Mila. They had Dam Mila before they left Mitzrayim, because Dam Pesach and Dam Mila called Orel Lo Yochal Bo. So they had Mila ready. So why did that Dam help? Okay, v'evor alayach v'erech misbaseses b'damayach v'amalach b'damayach hayin. Everybody says about that, got it? So again, the Medrash, in its literal meaning, simply doesn't tolerate a literal meaning. There's something behind this Medrash. Okay. So I just want to go back to the theme that we were discussing last time. And that is that basically the Makos were not simply vehicles of fear. You see, they weren't vehicles of fear to frighten the Mitzrayim into conceding, into yielding. But really what went on between Paro and Moshe was a metaphysical debate, an argument, a serious metaphysical argument between two positions, the position of the Egyptians and the position of Moshe Rabbeinu, which were diametrically opposed. And the position of the position of the Egyptians was a whole philosophy, that the whole purpose of the Makos was to undermine that philosophy. And that is stated in the Pasuk, where the Pasuk says, Laman Teda, after Tzfardea. Just a second. second. After Dom. Laman teda ki ein kad Hashem alekenu, and laman teda ki ani Hashem bekerav haaretz. That's the place of Moshe as Goshen, the vilti Hashem orav laman teda ki ani Hashem bekerav haaretz, and laman teda ki ein kad Hashem alekenu. So the idea was really to show that, and that's what the Ramban explains. Ramban explains that Paro didn't deny God. He didn't deny the source of existence. But what he did maintain was that that's true outside the area of human affairs. But in the area of human affairs, there are other forces that we have to cope with. And these have nothing, are very unlike what we deal with when we deal with scientific knowledge. Knowledge that has to do with the natural law. He didn't deny the natural law. That's why the Ramban says, for instance, when Paro said, Lo yadati es Hashem, so he meant, I don't know, the shem hamayuchat, that there's one God, and that this one God is the only thing that exists, and everything is from him. That he didn't know, the shem hamayuchat. But he did believe that there is a God behind nature. So he says, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu answered him and said, okay, he gave in. He said, Elokeho Ivrim Nikrolanu. Because Elokeho Ivrim is the Shem Shakai, which means God behind the laws of nature. So that he accepted. That's what Ramban explains. But the argument was, the belief of the Egyptians was, that this is true, but when it comes to personal human affairs, there is something else going on here. And this something else demands another kind of approach and another vehicle. And it demands sub-deities and a whole system of sub-deities. This was the belief system of the Egyptians. So, and we mentioned that last time. But I would just like to clarify and define what exactly is meant by the position of the Egyptians. I mean, it's very hard for us to uncover these ideas because they seem to be kind of lost in the past. But in truth, they aren't. But they're kind of disguised. But that's why Rashi says, that's why the Rambam says that if we understood the primitive religions, we'd have a much better idea of many of the mitzvahs of the Torah, which are directed on uprooting those kind of emotions. And Rashi says in Dvarim that Losomod Lasos Avalata Lomed Lahovin Lahoros, that you should go and you should study the other religions in order to understand the nonsense and how they work. So when you see your son doing something, you should say, don't do that. That's Derech Avodah Zarah. So Rashi says that it's Chazal, really. It's a chiyuv for a person to understand these primitive ideas in order to be wary, and when he sees his son doing it, which is many times a lot of these things are based on the instinctual, he'll be able to instruct him and say, no, that's not reality, that's an instinctual force, which is Avodah Zarah, which is basically nonsense. So there is an area that the Torah instructs us that we have a knowledge, a certain kind of a knowledge of the primitive emotions and the primitive idolatry, so we could recognize it and therefore improve ourselves. So I would like to just define, because I heard somebody ask also, what do we mean when we say that with regard to human affairs there's something else? What exactly did Paro mean? How would you define that in like one phrase? You see, what is there's a lot of things there in the primitive. And, I can't go into all the details of the primitive religions, but just to give a general definition of what the overall argument and belief system is and how it contradicts our system. Okay, and that was really the whole argument here. And that was the purpose of the Makos. The Makos was to demonstrate through his Galus Hashem to demonstrate a philosophical principle. But there, the argument can be boiled down, I think, to one simple idea. And that is, the question is, do we believe in the reality of the products of the psyche? That's the question, you see. That is the point that was argued between Parah and Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was demonstrated by the Makos, that the all primitive religions, and the Egyptians were of the highest order of that system of religions, all believe that the products of the psyche are real. I mean, that's basically what they maintain. And because the products of the psyche are real, so we have to have different ways of dealing with these products. Okay, for instance, the Egyptians in the tombs, so they'd have food for the dead in the tombs. Now, they weren't stupid people. I mean, they knew they came back the next day, the food is still there. So why did they do that, you see? But the reason why they did that was, when you study their religion, was because they believed in a spirit of the food. You see, they believe the thing has a spirit. That the reason why food nurtures you is because there's a spirit in the food. And that spirit is what nurtures you. So therefore they believed that if they put the food next to the dead, it's true the dead can't consume it, but they can absorb the spirit of the food, and this will give them subsistence, you see. So that, I'm just giving you an illustration of the belief system. All the primitive belief systems are based on that same kind of thinking. Namely, that there are products of the psyche, and the products of the psyche are real, and therefore we have to deal with them in some fashion. And that's why they invented counter things like their gods, which were protective. And that is true, that's the general picture of the whole system, the belief system of the primitive. For instance, in magic, there was a tremendous fear that somebody's going to become bewitched, because it was believed that a person can somehow project onto others some kind of evil force, and this force is very harmful. So protective measures were necessary in order to make sure it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen, one second. So all this type of thinking, like for instance, the what was the most essential, if you want to point to the most essential in Egypt, what was the most essential product of the psyche that really, dominated the whole mind of the Egyptian? If you wanted to point to one thing, it would definitely be the fantasy of immortality. I mean, the whole life of the Egyptian was in order to gain immortality. So that's why giant tombs pyramids were built, in order to give the individual this immortality, which was, according to him, not just a product of his psyche, but was a reality. So things have to be done in order to make sure that reality is dealt with in the proper manner. But every one of these things, the whole system of the Egyptians, was basically, that was really the essence of what the system was. It was the belief in the fact that the products of the mind are real. I mean, the mind, I mean, the psyche or and the imagination are real. And you can't, the God of the natural law doesn't work in this area. This is not an area where you could use logic and reason and scientific thinking. So it's a kind of like a subsystem that works, has its own laws. And these products defy any kind of logical analysis like we use in science in terms of the laws of nature, you see, universal laws. So they must be dealt with in a different way. And of course, to the Egyptian, they were very important because their whole life depends on that, you see. This was really their view. Okay, any questions? Somebody have questions? Okay. This was...
I'll get it.
You don't get it? Okay. Well, product of the mind, I mean, to give you an example, a simple example is, let's say, a ghost. Okay? People are afraid of ghosts. I mean, you see, you take a look at your television, you'll see they have Ghostbusters. They have, what was that? The Amityville Horror. I mean, people still believe in these things. The products of the mind. Okay, that's an example. But a modern-day man may think he's very superior to the Egyptian, but basically, if he looks into himself carefully, he sees he didn't go too far. He didn't go too far. We had Yetzias Mitzrayim, but the rest of the world is still steeped there a lot. So the thing is that the witches in Salem, I mean, all these things, the witches in Salem, if you want to study the history of what happened there, that's the same kind of a thing. That people can project forces, evil forces, and these forces obviously don't fall under the realm of natural law. It's not like you're in a laboratory and you're analyzing something. It's a different sphere. And this sphere must be dealt with in its own way. And these sub-deities were the ones that were, you know, in their minds, they were the things that you had to make recourse to in order to resolve these dilemmas, in order to these problems, these dangers. I mean, that was, to state it simply, that is the system. That is their system. That's their belief system, okay? But there are many, I mean, products of the mind are many products of the mind, yes.
Ayahuasca, thank you.
Yeah, I want to mention that. My son pointed out something to me yesterday, which I think is of great significance. And that is, you see, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to prove one thing, and that is that there is nothing else. Ki ein kamoni b'chol aretz. Ein kadosh kadoshem, why? Ki ein biltecha. Because there is nothing besides God. So Moshe Rabbeinu's thesis was that God exists, of course, that's what the Ramban says. Paro was a great chacham and he believed in the existence of God. But the whole argument was to show that there is nothing else. Laman teda ki l'Hashem ha'aretz. And that's like the Ramban and the Rambam. But it's even the Pshuta Shomikra. It means that God's Ashgacha is the only thing. And there is nothing else. And that brings me to the point you mentioned. You see, the thing is that in yesterday's Haftorah, so Eliyahu HaNavi says an interesting thing. I mean, a little bit of a strange thing, perhaps. But Eliyahu HaNavi says to the Jews who are serving the Baal, so he says to them that he got them together for a demonstration that it's false. I mean, you know, you all know the account. But before the account, he says like this. He says, he told Vayishlach Achav B'chol Menei Tzvayim Vayikbos Esanavim Al Har Karmel and Nevi Abal Vayigash El Yo Al Kol Om Vayoma Ad Masai Atem Poskim Al Shtei Asipim. How long are you going to jump on the two branches? Im Arashem Ulkim L'chulachrov Vim Abal L'chulachrov. So what was El Yonavi saying? Was he giving them advice? Let's say, for instance, he had a Jew that was he was Poseh HaShtei HaSipim, a little bit of Baal, a little bit of Hashem. I mean, so what was Eliyahu HaNavi telling him? Give Hashem up and go after the Baal. There's a strange, sounds like strange advice. I don't think today in a Kirov program that somebody would suggest that to a person that was torn between two belief systems. But you could say that Eliyahu HaNavi was not giving, perhaps he wasn't giving that advice directly. It was just like Derech Mashal. But Rashi interprets it literally. Rashi says, L'chu achrav, literally. If that's what you hold, then go after Baal. So why should Eliyahu HaNavi tell people who are sort of like mixed up, confused, to go totally towards Baal? The answer is like this. The answer is, a person in Yahadus, the objective of a person's life is to be as close to the truth as possible. So Eliyahu HaNavi was saying, you're closer to the truth if you're only with Baal. If you're with both, then you'll never be able to reach the truth, because then you're deluding yourself. You see, if a person is sincere and if he at least has the principle of consistency, I mean, Yisro served Avodah Zarah, but he was consistent. he thought this is the correct idea at the time, and he was consistent. Then, when he saw it was wrong, so he abandoned it. Okay, Avramovino, when he was young, served the Bodhisattva. But then he saw these ideas are nonsense. So that's what Eliyahu HaNavi was saying, that if you are consistent, at least be consistent, because a person that is consistent, at least there's hope that he'll be able to see the truth. But a person that deludes himself, you see, that he there's no hope for that person, because he's satisfied, I believe in Hashem, but on the other hand, in his belief system, you see, he's inconsistent. So the person who is self-deluding is the furthest away from the truth. His belief in God is worthless, because you can't have a semi-belief in God, in our God, because, like the Rambam says, one mistake and it's not God. So you can't allow for any error over here. So the Eliyahu HaNavi was saying,
which one's going to come to truth ultimately?
Well, I can't answer that question simply, because you have to understand what exactly is meant. I mean, it's a question I have to elaborate on. I can't give you a regular answer, yes or no. It depends what you mean by atheist. Agnostic. If you ask me agnostic, atheist is oh my novel believer, I know it can. There's no real atheist, you see. An atheist is a person that believes in something, because you have to have something at the center of your belief system. There can't be a vacuum there. No human being can get up in the morning if he has nothing. So an atheist is one who has taken something else as the center of reality and existence. So there's no such thing as an atheist as people understand it. That's a misnomer. The atheist has to believe in something. I mean, there has to be something real to him. So whatever that reality is, that's his God. I mean, that's what everything revolves around. So that is the idea for him of existence. So it has to be wrong. So now your question has to be, which wrong is worse? That's a good question. It's not easy to answer which one, but it's the same thing. And that's why the Torah doesn't mention atheists, because atheists is the same thing as Avodah Zarah. It's just a different form. There's only Avodah Zarah. So now the question would be, which form of Avodah Zarah is better or worse? I don't know. That's a difficult analysis. But that's really... yes? That's correct. That's right, exactly. The person that's inconsistent, that's a very good point, the person that's inconsistent is just setting up belief systems based on emotions. See, emotions, in the emotional world, there's no contradiction. You have one emotion one time, another emotion another time. Two contrary emotions coexist. A person can be ambivalent, he can be happy, he can be sad at the same time. The emotions don't demand consistency. Logic demands consistency. So that's really what that was the message of Eliyahu HaNavi. Rashi makes it clear that he was saying, go after the Baal, at least be consistent. At least then there's hope, because you're operating on a plane of reason. But if you're doing both, so then you're simply purely emotions, and there's no way at all to reach to such an individual. You see, that was the message of Eliyahu HaNavi. That was the message of Eliyahu HaNavi. And the people there at that time, it says that v'lo ano osadava, they didn't answer anything, because they knew that they were inconsistent, and they knew that argument that Eliyahu HaNavi presented to them was a devastating one. It was a devastating one. It woke them up, because they saw, they realized that's true. They don't have any consistent. A person can live many times through emotional belief systems, and they don't question them, and they can go through their entire life living with inconsistencies. And it's like one philosopher said that his grandmother was a very ethical woman, but it was okay for her to have one emotion is the right emotion at this time, and another emotion is the appropriate one for another time. There was never a demand for consistency. See, that's bad. That's bad. So that's really what Eliyahu HaNavi, he made the people realize, they didn't answer anything. Because they realized that he was they couldn't answer that question. That was probably the most powerful thing of the whole, of the entire. You see, the event. Everybody looks at the event in Har Carmel. Wow, you know, that really demonstrates the existence of God. You see, all these things can't do anything if you don't have the prerequisite. The prerequisite is the human mind. If you don't have the prerequisite, miracles just don't mean anything. They're just events that register on your sensory apparatus. But what does it do? What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. So Eliyahu HaNavi did the most important step. Before he brought into play the events, you see, what he did was he showed them the basis, which is necessary in order to absorb what's going to unfold. And that is the demand for consistency, you see. And that was his argument. It was a powerful argument. And Velo Onu Amos Odova means they realized that that was the most important thing. That set the groundwork for what took place afterwards. You see, because he stunned them with the question. They couldn't answer the question. So that is now your question about Ayin Hara is the same thing. That if a person will believe that God is the Melech HaMishpat and Kol Derachav Mishpat and Ein Od Movado, and he will simultaneously believe that there is some kind of a force that God can't control, or that if he can't control Mebliach Holos HaRashem, he doesn't have the ability to control it, and allows this force to override his system of Schar V'Onesh, this person is Shtei Asitim. Then he's compromised. Because what he's saying is he doesn't really believe that God is the Kol Yachol, and that his Mishpat is perfect, and he doesn't need anybody else to help him out in Mishpat. Anytime, and the argument of Eliyahu HaNavi is an argument which is applicable today as well. Because these things are not, I mean, people look at these things as things of the past, and they have no, we're beyond this, and we're, and it doesn't have any real relevance today, because I don't want to say that, because you're not supposed to say that. But they really believe that these things are in the past, and we have gone way beyond that, and we're not like the people on Har Carmel. But the truth of the matter is that's a false arrogance, because the same thing exists today, where people have dual systems, they're poseach and shtei asipim. On the one hand, they believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Nemon L'Shalem Schar, and is an Ein Od Movado. But on the other hand, they also believe in many other forces, that other forces can determine their fate. And they don't find any contradiction in this dual belief system. They didn't come to the level of the Om that stood by Har HaKamel, V'lo Anu Ha'amos Adava. They recognized Eliyahu HaNavi was right. It can't be, you can't compromise your belief system. Then you're nowheres. And then there's no hope for such an individual. But in today's world as well, it's true that people are poseach and shtei asipim. On the one hand, they believe that God is the Melech HaMishpat and Eidon Muvado. But on the other hand, they believe that their fate in the hands of God alone is not going to be necessarily a good one. But they need to make recourse to other forces and powers in order to secure their fate. That's a denial of Ein Od Muvado. That's exactly what Paro's belief system was. You see, it's the same thing basically. It's just matters of, you know, if you use a modern, if you cloak it in a modern situation, it sounds better. And then in the old situation, you could laugh at it. But you really can't laugh at it, because it's the same thing that people do, because human nature is the same, and the Torah was given in order to correct human nature. Okay, so the thing is, getting back to Paro, so what was that was Paro's system. And like I said, it really isn't antiquated. People believe it today. You'll see many, what do you call it, what's that movie? Where they have sorcery and they remove a demon. Exorcism, people believe in. And they believe in the astrology and all these kind of things. I mean, people do believe in these things today. I mean, it is an amazing thing that in spite of the advances of science, I mean, it hasn't helped man too much on this level. I mean, they believe in the products of the psyche, which is basically Paro's belief system. It only sounds funny, like I said, when you pick a particular belief system, you can laugh at it. But if it's yours, it's not funny. So the thing is that the modern man basically is in the same frame of mind as Paro. Qualitatively, most of modern man is that in the same frame of mind as Paro. That they believe in a Borei Olam. You see, they believe in a Borei Olam, and they believe in laws of the universe, but not when it comes to human affairs. Human affairs are different, and in order to succeed and to ensure your fate in the area of human affairs, you'd better make use of some other methods than science. Don't rely on knowledge. Like I saw the troops are preparing in the American troops in Iraq. Kuwait. So they interviewed the troops. So they all showed the little things that they have with them to protect them. A rabbit's foot. One had something that his grandfather went through the Second World War with, and his great-grandfather. And I mean, this is reported in the news. And he says, yep, I'm hanging on to this. So he feels it gives him security. Because this thing, his father went through the Second World War with, and his grandfather went through the First World War, and they all had this thing. So this thing must have special powers, and if he hangs on to it, it'll get him through this war. Now, that is basically the same thing. It's identical. It means that that's power. That the products of the psyche are real, and over here, we shouldn't look for knowledge, but what we should look for is something more in line with these products that is appropriate in dealing with these things. So modern man, really, the soldier who is standing next to the most sophisticated weaponry in the world, holding onto his rabbit's foot, is really the exact philosophy of power. That's it. There's no contradiction. There are laws, universal laws that we make use of, but then when it comes to the personal realm, we have to make use of something other. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was arguing with Paro. So you see, that's not so. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to take up that job. It's not an easy battle. but the argument that, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's argument? Moshe Rabbeinu's argument was that all these things are imagination and nonsense. Same argument as Avraham Avinu. But there's only one thing, and that's the source of all existence. And the source of all existence, and there is nothing else, and everything is determined by God's justice. In other words, like this, make it more clear. What it means is that all the products of the psyche are really just a result of the natural law. Those are things that you have to use your intelligence in order to understand their source. You see, there's a reason why people fear ghosts, but the way to approach it is not to posit that the ghost is a reality, but rather to posit that there are causal connections between our underlying instinctual life and between the product of the ghost. And if you'll analyze it and you study it, you'll see it's all natural law. Kirat Hashem Haaretz. The natural law is everywhere. It's even in you. It's even in you. So the instinctual world is the world which demands the study and knowledge, just like the external world demands study and knowledge. And the instinctual world works according to laws, logical principles, just like everything else in the universe. It is no different. But there is one area that is devoid of the natural law. And it's devoid of the natural law because it's of a different nature. And that is the soul of man, which has Bechira. And Bechira means that the soul is able to make a choice. And it's unlike the creation in terms of its causation. It is not caused like the creation, but it is part of the creation. But it's everything in the creation is not identical. But the soul of man is able to choose, is free. It is not a result of a chain of causes. And to that, there is the reality of justice. Justice is a reality. And God, the source of all existence, is involved in this justice process. But everything is Chochmah, and there is nothing else. And everything stems from God's existence. That's basically Moshe Rabbeinu's principle. That was the debate between Moshe Rabbeinu and Paro. Are these phenomena that we see, that are products of the psyche, are they real existences? Or are they simply a result of natural law, just like anything else? You see, that was Moshe Rabbeinu's argument. So that's why you see when you follow through. So there's a progression in Paro. Paro is a student, and Paro progresses with the Makos. For instance, first he says, like I said, Dami didn't say anything, but by Tzvardeya, he says something. Now it's interesting. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu really taught Paro two principles. One was this idea that everything is the natural law, except Hashgacha Pratis Chava Onesh, which is different, because that's Hashgachas Hashem, Schar V'Onesh. And he taught him something else also, because every time he was mispalel. It's an interesting thing. You notice that? Like in every time he's mispalel. Yeah, he says L'masai atir l'cha. Okay? Atir al Hashem, the Yosef Tzvad menu me'ami, v'ashal chlasam. Every time it was tefillah, you see. By every time when Paro wanted to a maka remove, Moshe Rabbeinu always employed tefillah. Why do you have to employ tefillah? Why do you just, that's it? He's shoved, so that's the end of the maka. The answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching Paro a very important principle. That, you see, there is the natural law, and then there is Hashgacha. Hashgacha is the only thing that overrides the natural law. And how does the individual get to Hashgacha? Through the medium of tefillah. The medium of tefillah. He really was teaching Paro the Yesod HaDos in all the Makos. So he taught, and that's true also, not only is that true with regard to the outside, the external world, that tefillah is the only medium, but it's true even, and this you find in Tehillim, this idea, many times, that it's true with regard to the internal world also. That a person, just like a person should be mispalel for things in the external world, he should also be mispalel that the instinctual forces should not prevent him from attaining perfection as well, you see. Because the instinctual forces are also the inner forces. The inner world is also a part of the natural, under the natural law. So that's why many tefillos in Tehillim are like that. That the inner world shouldn't overpower him so that he doesn't see the truth and he fails to attain perfection. So tefillah really is on the full gamut of the existing world, the external and the internal. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching Paro, that idea as well. Because every time it was, I'll be mispalel for you. And Paro understood that. Because every time he said, Hatiru al Hashem, Hatiru Badi. So he understood that idea, and when he was swayed to Moshe Rabbeinu's position, he employed the ideas that Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching him. So those were really the Yesod HaDos that were uncovered in the Makos, and that's really the essence of the Makos. Like I said, and Makos don't mean anything, because natural events, even cataclysmic events, don't mean anything unless the person has a base, a framework with which to view them. And Moshe Rabbeinu was supplying Paro with the framework. Yeah. So as Paro progressed, as he advanced, he kept on saying different things. But the first he said, and first by the I've got a regular chumash. I forgot to find this one. No, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, so like I said, so by Dami he didn't say anything. By Tzvardeya, yeah, by Tzvardeya he said, Hatira al Hashem, v'yosat Tzvardim menu me'ami. Okay. Then Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, I'll give you the opportunity to test it, to see when. You tell me when to be mispalel, and it'll go away exactly at that time. So, as I mentioned last time, Yom HaMachar, even though it was painful to take another day, but Paro was a great chacham, he said, "Let's this experiment is worthwhile." So he said, "Lamacha." And then that was dumb. That was Tzvardeya. And then by Orov also, by Orov Vayetze, yeah, he says, right. He said, "Atirubadi, Atirubadi." By Yetzim Moshe Rabbeinu Paro, Yetzim Al Hashem. Okay, and that was the makkah where there was a differentiation. Then there was borod, and by borod is where he says the statement. He comes out with that statement. He says because says, that was the most powerful of the makkah. See, that should have been the last makkah, borod. That was the conclusion of the entire line of makkahs. But in order to increase the manifestation of the Zgalus Hashem, so the other three were added. That's what the pasuk says in the beginning of Bo. But Bora was hit by Pamazos and Ishalech is Kol Magdei Fosei Alipchad. It had the most powerful emotional effect because of the fact that it was atmospheric and the effect of the makkah. So after Barod, so
definitely sent out also
the people. He sent out to say no. I'm just not. The pasuk says, this is the most powerful marker. Okay, kol magei fosei libcha. Barod was most powerful. Let's rush this. There's no marker like Barod. So Barod was really supposed to be the end, and according to natural order, that would have been the end. But the reason why it was more was because the man shisi. So that's why the other three had to be added. But the response of Paro is in line with that idea. Because that's when Paro said, Vayishlach Paro, Vayikol Moshon, Vayomar Alem, Chotosi Apam. Amazing statement. What do you have to say that for? He just wants to get rid of the makkah. Just say, okay, like you said before, Vatiru Badi, and go Luchu Zivcha Lulakechem Bamidbar. But no, he says Chatosi Hapom Adashem Hatzadik Maniva Ami Horeshaya. That's when he recognized fully, he conceded fully to Moshe Rabbeinu's philosophy that Chatosi there's Chait, the only thing there is Chait, Schav Onesh Adashem Hatzadik Maniva Ami Horeshaya. He recognized the principle of Schav Onesh. That was after Makas Bara. Okay. So then, interestingly, so he finally came, Makas Bara, like I said, is a progression. He finally came to the true ideas of the system. So then he said, Miva Meaholchem, and he says, and once he heard that everybody's going, so he had a change of heart. But what did he say? He says, this was a new argument, you see. This was a new argument. What was this argument? This argument, like we're saying, Paro was a great chacham, like Ramban Sarashan, he was a great chacham, and he thought of a counter-argument. What was the counter-argument? The counter-argument was, your system is correct. System is logical. It's logical 100%. I see that the products of the mind have to be analyzed just like anything else, and the whole ideas, all these ideas are myths, imagination, all nonsense. But there's one question that I have, and that's ki ra'a neged penechem. What does ra'a mean? See, why do they call that star ra'a? What do you mean that star? It's the only time that star ever rose. I mean, ra'a. But Chazal are really in that mushel, they're conveying a very deep idea. Ra'a means bad. What is ra'a? Ra'a means bad. Bad for who? Bad for people, you see. Ra'a means it's something that's not good. So what was Parah's argument? Parah's argument was, yeah, it's true. You're philosophically 100%. I can't argue with you. Logically, that's it. You've disproven it. Because now I know, Kilat Hashem Oretz. But there's another question. The question is, can man live like that? Is that a viable existence? Even if your ideas are right, but you haven't won the argument by showing me that you have the correct philosophy. Because what good is a philosophy if a person isn't structured to live in accordance with that philosophy? You see? That's what he said. That was raw. Re'u ki raw neged penechem. He says, I see dam in the midbar. I see hariga. Why? You're right. The ideas are very good, but they aren't livable. You see? People can't live like that. Because the emotional world is so powerful, conjures up all these images and all these things. And you're right. I see that it can be traced all to natural source. It's all instinctual. But the fact is, when I think about it, it can't work because the emotional forces are so powerful that no people could live by those ideas. You're not, people aren't made that way. Because an analysis of the human mind will show you the tremendous force and power attached to these things that produce these ideas. It's not a small thing. That's why he said, Ki ro'a neged penechem, dam ani ro'a lechem amidbar. You see? It's very good philosophy, but it's going to end up in dam and harira. You see? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Lomo yomru mitzrayim lemor baro'a hotziyom. Laro gosom behorim alachalosom al pedei adoma. That was really Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah. His tefillah was that Paro's argument now is going to be proven true. Because his argument was, he gave up on the philosophy he recognized. Yeah, it's silly. When you look into it really and you analyze it, and you have a teacher like Moshe Rabbeinu, after a few months you see that it's all nonsense. But the fact is, it could be nonsense, but you can't live like that. Because what happened? Where are your emotions? How do you satisfy your emotions? How could people live without emotions? I mean, you can't have just a head without a goof, like the muscle that the world uses. You have to satisfy the instinctual. So that was his argument. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, now Mitzrayim is going, this will be the greatest Chil Hashem. Because Mitzrayim will say, you see that? The argument was right. Because how long did they last? They just went into the Midbar, they just see us Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, and in a short time, they're already going back to the primitive. But they had the best teacher. They had Moshe Rabbeinu Mipi Agvura. You can't get a better teacher than that. And in spite of all the instruction, and in spite of all the intellectuality, and all the chachmah that they received, but what happened? A moment of fear, and they reverted back and fell back onto their old support system. You see. So Paro will say, that proves it. See, there's two ways you can win the argument against Yahadis. One is, argue the facts, which system is correct. So that argument Paro gave up. But he realized that it doesn't make any sense. But the other argument was the one he hung on to, that it won't succeed. It's not a tenable philosophy, because people are primitive by nature, and they need these things. And as you see today, that people, as modern as they are, they need these things. They must have the rabbit's foot. They must have all these things, the astrology and all these things, because the forces of the mind are too powerful. So that's why the world accepts it today. Why does the world accept it today? Because that's what they believe. They say, yeah, of course, it may be silly if you sit the person down and explain it. Yeah, but still, I'm doing it. It means that he recognizes that you can't live a logical life. It might be nice, but it's not a way of life. That was Paro's argument, and that was really what Moshe Rabbeinu said. This will be now the whole system is before the world. And this will be the greatest Chil Hashem. Not a Chil Hashem in terms of what they believe about God, but a Chil Hashem in terms of the living that way. So what good is it? God doesn't need our recognition. The whole thing is that he gave us a Derech HaChaim, which is the correct Derech HaChaim for us. So if the Derech HaChaim is proven false, that's the greatest Chil Hashem. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's argument. So and that was the argument that succeeded. That was the argument that succeeded. So that was the tefillah. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillahs weren't just wasn't what the world thinks. Begging, tefillah's not begging. Tefillah's chachma. That was the chachma of his tefillah. That was his argument, and that tefillah was successful. So now we can explain the answer to the other questions as well on the Medrash itself, because the Medrash is very strange. You take the Medrash literally. So what does it have to do if it's something in the Midbar? So why is Yeshua, after they entered the Eretz Yisrael, we're not in the Midbar anymore? Okay, so the answer is, you see, what does it got to do with Hayom Galosi Me'alechem Escherpas Mitzrayim? But the answer is what Moshe Rabbeinu's answer to Paro was that you're right, that it's true, the instinctual forces are very powerful, but we have an antidote to those forces. And the antidote to those forces is the mitzvos, the system of mitzvos. And the system of mitzvos is something which is a bris bivsoreinu. And that is the bris mila, the dam mila. So the dam mila, the mitzvos mila, it's not mila per se, it's the fact that the mitzvos mila is really kol haTorah kula. As the Gemara said, David HaMelech, when he didn't have any mitzvos, he was in a bathhouse, so he realized that he has a mitzvah. He's a ben bris, you see. He's never without mitzvahs. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu's answer was to Paro. That was his answer. That you're right. If it weren't for the system of mitzvos, there would be no outlet for the instinctual. See, very much in line with the Rambam Shita. The Rambam says that the sacrifices, why do they have to have such elaborate systems of kabbonis? So the Rambam says it would be impossible to take them out of Mitzrayim and to just take away all their outlets. So, and Ram says, don't think that's a bad thing. Don't think that's a bad thing. He says, because you see many times HaKadosh Baruch Hu does something to avoid something. To avoid something. Like, V'lonochem olkim derech eretz polishtim, ki karavol. Ki yom olkim pen yinochem olam, v'rosu mocham v'shav mitzrayimah. So avoidance is just as important. Just as important. Everything doesn't have to be essential. The main thing is that man should be able to lead a perfected life. And certain things have to, certain institutions have to come into existence. That was the answer. The answer was mitzvos, you see. That's why, that's hayom galosim e'alechem eschepas mitzrayim. It's not the midbar. It's not the midbar that's the problem. It's Paro's argument that's the problem. How do you answer that problem? How do you show that the system of Yahadis is a viable one? And that's what Yeshua said. Hayom galosim e'alechem eschepas mitzrayim. If it wouldn't be for Milo, then it's true. Because Milo really makes the person into a ben bris and identifies him by a mitzvah begufo, brischa shechasamto b'vsoreinu. That is the thing that allows man to live the life of Torah. Without that, he would not be able to do it. Paro's argument was not a stupid one. It was a powerful argument because he was a great chacham gadol hayah. That was his argument. Now, why wasn't the bris in Mitzrayim good? You see, why wasn't the bris in Mitzrayim good? The answer is because really the pasuk says mul that Yeshua ben Nun received the tzivui mul es bnei Yisrael shenis. So Chazal say, what is shenis? So Chazal say because this was the first mitzvah milah, structured like a mitzvah, not like. Simply like the Milas Avram, because what was added was priya was added. It was given a tsuras hamitzvah, and it wasn't simply doing what Avram Avinu did. It was given a separate tsura, and it was incorporated as a mitzvah shel tayag mitzvos. That was the first real milah, was by Yeshua, because that was the first one that was done after Matan Torah, within the halachic system, as part of the system. That's why it's Hayom Galosim Alechem Escharpas Mitzrayim. They did Mila Mitzrayim, that's true. And because of that, they were Nigel, because of Bris Mila and Karban Pesach, that's true. But that was simply a vehicle. That was a vehicle at the time. But what is the permanent institution? The permanent institution was the Mila that is structured as a component of Tayag. That was the first time that happened, was by Yeshua. That's the meaning of the Medrash. That without mitzvahs, without the Torah satisfying, the Torah does take into consideration the instinctual part of man. But in mitzvahs, in the system of Torah, every aspect of man is satisfied and he's capable of living a life devoted to Chochmas Hashem. Okay, so. Yeah. By the way, there's one thing I want to mention. You mentioned that. The Rambam says, Chazal say, that Torah is not, and this is an important yisod, that Torah also lis rapos midivei Torah. That's why the Rambam says that the person can say tillim if he's well, because then he's using it in order to simply think of the correct ideas. But if he's using it as a medium and a vehicle of a cure, is ein lochel golam abo, because divrei Torah are not refuas aguf, they're refuas anefesh. See, that idea is a very sublime idea, that a person should know. You see, that fact is not just a detail, but really it's kola Torah kula. It means that the Torah demands that we follow it because it's refuas hanefesh, and the nefesh is the most important thing in man. And that's why if an individual takes it and uses it for refuas haguf, is ein lo chel olam haba, because he has no concept of what Torah is all about. You see, so the idea that a mezuzah has some kind of a magical shmira to it is absolutely is compromising a yesod hadas, and yesod hadas can't be compromised. It either is there in full or else it's not there at all. So if a person should believe that because a sofer wrote the mezuzah improperly, that's why he's going to be nenesh, when he had no way of knowing it, and he did the same thing as his friend next door, and the friend next door, because the sofer didn't make a mistake, will live, and he, because the sofer made a mistake, will die. This is against the whole idea of schar v'onesh, as against the whole idea of melech ha-mishpat. It's against what Moshe Rabbeinu taught Paro. It's against all the Yesod Yadas. That is, and if a person does believe that, that means he's poseich al shteyas, he's fooling himself. He thinks he believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Einod Mufado, and he's the source of all Mishpat and Kol Drach of Mishpat. He thinks that, but on the other hand, he doesn't think that, because he openly contradicts it. So there cannot be any compromise. That was Eliyahu HaNavi said. You can't, that position is the worst position of all, because then the person is not even consistent. So he can't be reached with any chachma at all. He's just in self-delusion and completely operating on an emotional plane without any chachma. And the yisod of kol ha-Torah kula is chachma.
What was the idea of the kochav that Paro said it's not the kochav? Is that like an expression of natural law?
No, yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Yeah, that's very good. The reason why he said kochav is because the natural law is often referred to as mareches hashamayim. The natural law, you see, it means because God is the source of the that's why Shakai is, he controls the Mareches HaShemayim. It means he's the source of the natural law, and the natural law is under his control, you see. That's why Kochav is used, that's exactly right, that's why Kochav is used, because he's saying there is, actually when you look at the Mashal, you see it's very beautifully formulated, because what he's saying is, he didn't say Kochavim, he said there's one Kochav. Because what he meant was that essentially the argument is correct. But there's one kind of a law that will prevent this from coming into existence. And that is the human law, human nature, you see. So he used one kochav, Chazal used one kochav as an example of that idea that it's not an argument against the system actually, but it's not going to work because of another natural law, and that's the human nature. It's not in line with human nature. Human nature can't live up to that. Certainly, Paro's argument, as you can see, he was a great chacham, because his argument is proven true down through the ages, even Adi Amazah. So he was not a fool. Yeah.
Did he ever come around or to change
that? I don't know. That's a good question. The way the system of mitzvahs interferes on the emotional level is twofold. On the one hand, you see, the real way that it does it is it confirms the individual and drives him towards Chachma. You see, and Chachma is the ultimate answer. Chachma Satara. That's why we have Tamidei Chachamim. Chachma Satara. Chachma Sashem. Diyas Hashem. Everything is Chachma. But the only problem is that if you take a person and you isolate him and you say, okay, you be a Chachma. It's like I believe the Kuzri says, that, you know, you put him, will be in a room for a few hours, after a while he can't do it. I mean, you know, it's very nice. One person in millions is able to do that. So the system of the Torah is one which satisfies through mitzvos, which constantly the mitzvah itself is an article of limud, and it draws his mind to it, and the energies are satisfied and at the same time drawn towards chachma. There's no mitzvah that we have that's just satisfaction of instinct. There's no mitzvah. Every mitzvah has an idea behind it. And within the framework of the natural activity of the human being is, alongside it, is always a train of thought, a train of halacha, a train of philosophy. And that is so that the chachma is always preserved in everything he does. If he eats, he has shailas, he has questions. Everything he does is surrounded. The mitzvahs, through taking the material situation and endowing it with the halakhic principles which are generated from philosophical principles, the whole system of chachma keeps the individual involved in chachma in a way that he could never do it on his own. He's simply one of Avraham Avinu, but a normal person, a regular person, an average person would not be able to do it. So the mitzvahs are the thing that sustain the human being through satisfying. It satisfies the instinctual, but not per se. Never really satisfies the instinctual per se. What it does is it satisfies him in a way where, alongside that satisfaction, is a serious thought on different levels, halachic levels, philosophical levels. You see, that's the way the system. That's the way the system works. And since he is engaged in chachma, so the chachma is the thing that saves him, and that's why he doesn't fall sway and fall under the imaginative realities that the rest of the world accepts, because the chachma demands that he analyze it and think into it.
Sounds similar to what the Rav mentions about his grandfather when he used to study
Ohio. There's one more thing I would mention about you asking about mitzvahs. You see, mitzvahs are not simply instinctual performances. And mitzvahs, the essence of mitzvahs is really the ideational. And you see from Dam Nilo itself, because Noshim have the same Kedushas Yisrael. It's not just the one in whom the mitzvah is performed. So you see, it's the concept of the mitzvah. The essence of the mitzvah is the limud, the concept, and the practice of the mitzvah is the practice which brings into play the ideas. You see? Okay.